Big edition of The Breakfast Club. It's great to have your company. If you missed any of the good stuff, here's a snippet of what we did. Morning, Adam White.
Good morning, Daniel Harford. Boris Becker's bankrupt.
Sorry?
Boris Becker is bankrupt.
How the hell is Boris Becker bankrupt?
Well, that's what I thought.
Try saying that 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Why? How is that the case? He was just coaching Novak Djokovic recently, and he's one of the best tennis players of the last 40 years, and... Yeah, anyway, I just saw that and thought that was a bit of a surprise.
Well, there's only one man who'll know how that happens. Australia's greatest ever outswing bowler, Damien Fleming, joins us on The Breakfast Club. Morning, Flem.
Morning, gentlemen.
How does that happen? How does Boris go bankrupt?
Too much money too early. 17-year-old.
Sure.
Just rocks through the 80... Was it 86 or 85 Wimbledon?
Oh.
He's got red hair.
85.
He's booming
he's got
the
red
drives.
Hair.
I'm 17. I'm right for the rest of my life. That's it.
It went on for that. It wasn't as if it was just that one paycheck, and it's taken him 32 years to spend.
No, he didn't learn early, you know, like you did half when you burst onto the scene for the Hawks, and there's flying airplanes, and there's 8 Brownlow votes in 3 games, and
should've
all that sort of
too.
Stuff.
Should have been nine. And, Sean McManus got 3.
You know, you just put a little bit of a deposit on a house, and you know, you've methodically made your way through the sporting industry on and off the field. And if only you could have been there for Boris.
I tell you what, if I'd made the money Boris had made, there would be no issues whatsoever. There'd be no bankrupt hubby
Whitey,
over here.
Back it up. What else? Is
well,
there
I'm
any
just,
little
I'm perplexed.
Things about that?
I'm perplexed.
Talking about, I think you might have talked about it yesterday, but geez, I'm loving Heath Shaw.
Sure. There's some big numbers this week. I mean, Heath Shaw's 250.
He's 250th game, and he's always been a character of the game. And I love his little quotes about himself. So he's got all the pump up, but he said, out of the 1733 games he's missed, has been due to club or AFL suspension.
Yes.
3,932 kicks he's worked out he's had, 58 on his left. He's had the 23rd most clangers ever, 686. Second most bounces, that's a positive.
That's a positive.
To the boomer, RSN's boomer, Harvey. And BOG and Mad Money Monday, 4 out of 13 times.
Which is a great ratio, really. It's a tough school, the Mad Monday school.
But that's, you know what I love about that, Whitey, is... There's preparation there, which I wouldn't think with Heath Shaw, and it just gives the journos and everyone and me quotes.
Exactly.
Good
right.
on him.
He's one that actually does enjoy talking to the media.
Yes. Penny Dangerfield standing up for access to the players yesterday as well as part of that ongoing discussion about coverage and access. Flem, can we flip it to the world of cricket for a second?
Yeah.
Now it's difficult to get hold of the cricketers too, and they're on plenty of cash. Is that an area that perhaps they should be more open to as well? Because obviously the focus has been on the AFL boys, but
yes.
Cricket, we never get hold of the big guys.
No, I think the most personal we get is actually in the Big Bash when we've got them mic'd up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I haven't heard anyone say that that's not a bad thing.
Hmm.
I don't think we're as open as other sports. I remember going down for the V8s. Phillip Island years ago,
yeah,
and I was astounded, and I was in the main marquee, and Greg Murphy's there, and I said, "Oh, Murph, you're not racing today, are you?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm racing an hour." Like they're just expected to go and see the sponsors, and then do the interviews, you know, down on the track.
Well, they're
and
the best at it.
That is unbelievable.
Mm.
And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
working in cricket and footy, just thinking how hard it is to actually get interviews. Cricket has to open up.
They're the best out at the V8s. The motorsport guys are just brilliant. And you're right. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's driven by the corporate dollar, which funds their business. But they get it. They do it, they move on, and then they perform. It's not a big deal to them.
But
maybe it could be part of the new MOU.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whitey.
Well,
but it shows, Whitey, that you don't have to fear it.
It's spot on. Absolutely. And it's one of my great frustrations is cricket. Cricket Australia or the Australian cricket team, they don't think they need to have, they don't need to do it because it's the great sport of the summer. It looks after itself. Whereas other sports actually need to promote themselves and the participants have to understand that they have to be giving of their time to give themselves a chance to be heard. And that's the great frustration for me with cricket is they don't think they have to. And it goes back to what Flem was saying with the Big Bash. When that was first came onto the scene. Well, the teams had to be promoted and the players had to be promoted. And we heard from them more than we've ever heard from them before. We thought, hey, these guys are good blokes. Mm. They're actually really good guys and they're happy to chat. There's a disconnect somewhere.
Well, it's one of the first times it was brought up, we had it on Fox Sports. And I think it was Gary Burchett, our senior producer, was going around talking about whether we could just interview the players once they got out, which for us old enough, remember when it first happened in World Series cricket. And I can't remember the boy who tried to interview Gordon Greenidge after he got LBW. Gordon, LB, a bit disappointed, goes, I hit it. Gordon, what did you think of the decision? I hit it. And that was it. Right? So that died at World Series cricket level. So we're bringing it back, right? We're bringing it back.
That's awesome.
And he went up to Queensland and he said, guys, we'd just love to be able to interview players once you're out. Not as you're walking off, but once you've got gathered your composure, can we have a chat? Big Matty Hayden, big Haydos, big 6'2", Jurassic Park, gets up, the big enforcer. I won't be getting interviewed when I get out. Not getting through this. There's just silence because big Haydos was the big alpha male in the group. Then all of a sudden, Clinton Perrin. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Clinton Perrin, fine state player, fine gentleman, puts his hand up and he goes, I've played for Queensland for 10 years. No one knows who I am. I am happy to be interviewed. And there was just a groundswell. And it got through. And so it's wondering, you talk to the top end and they might not want to do it. And as we're saying with the Big Bash, when it was supposed to be just a bit of hitting, giggle, we need the groundswell to come up from the state players. Mm. And I think on the Big Bash, we want to see more and more of that, don't we?
I do, and I'm sure our listeners do. Our sports-loving listeners do. We want to see more of that action. But if there is a reluctance from the stars to be a part of it, then it just sort of takes away a fair bit of the impact it can have.
Yeah, but I having said that, all of a sudden, Warnie was mic'd up, KP, the stars.
Yeah, well, that's
will
right.
Will go along with the flow. As with Big Bash cricket, it's not hit and giggle now. Like, I remember, two of my commentators... and teammates, Ricky Ponting and Adam Gilchrist, those first couple of one days, remember they had the big retro game over in New Zealand? And the Kiwis were awesome. Mm. They got their shags up and they grew their big moustaches and all that. We had one at the Gabba and I remember the boys, Punt and Gilly and going, as long as it's just a bit of hit and giggle. But meanwhile, on Fox Sports, we were already doing the Big Bash and it was starting. I'm going, boys, I tell you what. Mm. There's a rising up from below, and look how serious it is now. So I'm talking about the interviews, and we have fun, but the teams want to win. There's too much at risk.
The Australians were quite late on T20 cricket. They thought it was just going to be a bit of fun and that it wasn't going to be this serious form of the game.
Well, England were the innovators.
Absolutely.
Look where they are now.
Yeah. Well, they've actually just flogged South Africa overnight. So South Africa are having a really rough time in cricket at the moment. It's quite good.
I'm okay with that. Mm. Well, just back to your point, I remember...
Not as rough as Boris Becker.
No, Boris's world's a touch rougher. I remember the game against England at the Gabba. I don't know if it was a T20 or a...
Yeah, that one.
It was a T20.
That's the game I'm talking about.
That was
about.
The one where Adam Gilchrist was mic'd up behind the stumps, and he was being very, very humorous.
Yep.
And I hadn't heard much from Gilly up until that point. Oh. And I'm watching Adam Gilchrist, this bloke's pretty bloody good. He's fantastic. And then all of a sudden, they got him to throw to the break. Because it was end of the over, and he threw to the break, and we just got a wicket or a couple of wickets, and he goes, end of the seventh, England in all sorts, they're 2 for 12, it's all on here at the Gabba. and that was it, they threw to the break, and I thought, fantastic, what great interaction
is. Half. Yeah.
Adam Gilchrist is in my brain for his throw to the break up at the Gabba.
Now, it needs to be more open. Josh Jenkins, the Adelaide Crows player, he loves the American sport and all that. He's been a big driver from... And really, it needs to be driven from peer group pressure.
Has to, yep.
I still maintain it's all about the clubs, the football departments inside clubs.
But the players can control that. They can go and say to the clubs, this is what we're willing to do.
Yeah, to a point. Like back page of the Herald Sun today is a story about Scott Pendlebury saying that they feel that they partied away 2011. Now, I don't agree with that, to be honest. But it's something that a player has said. And it's on the back page of the paper, and we talk about No, no, we talk about things that a player has said. So rather than being an opinion piece, but this is a club-endorsed podcast show. He's talking, controlled. But it's on the Collingwood website. So that is content, and that's great. But it just proves that if players are prepared to talk, but in a more general sense, we'll keep talking about things that they are saying rather than the opinions that people in the media have.
Did he say that was when Heath Shaw went back-to-back, Mad Monday and VAG?
Didn't mention the VAG for Mad Monday. 18 past 6 on The Breakfast Club. Terry's in Broadmeadows on the open line, 1300 652 927. Good morning, Terry.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, Waddy. Bit of talk in the media recently about these opposition clubs targeting Jason Johansson before the match, before the Western Bulldogs games. I've got a good idea. Next time we play the Swans, we'll go out and target Isaac Heaney, or next time we play Melbourne, we'll go out and target Jeff Garland, see how they like it. Fair comment?
Well, can I just say, Terry, just from my experience, that the Bulldogs were the great targeters throughout my career when Terry Wallace was coaching.
Libba.
Dimmer. Jose Ramiro. And then you got Steve Credilk and the Michael Gardner game. Remember the Michael Gardner game at the Western
Danny Southern. What about Danny?
Headlock and Pettersumich with an injury in his life. So the Bulldogs have been good at targeting through the journey. And when they say targeting, it's just like Gary Ablett every week. If you're Gary Ablett and watching the game on Saturday night against Carlton for the Gold Coast, you just every time he went near the ball or a player ran near him, he got bumped, he got pushed, he got prodded to try and annoy the living daylights out of him. And that's a tactic to take out good players or get good players' minds off the game, Terry. Is that not fair enough?
That was a while back. I take your point a bit, but, I think the game's changed a bit in the last, say, 20 years. And, I personally wouldn't do it. I think if you can't win the game on your merits, don't turn up at all.
But which part of it upsets you or gets you off kilter a bit?
You know, just going the knuckle and getting stuck into him before the game. I just don't think it's a thing to do. You win your game on the merits, on your strength of your own team and your own game plan. You don't go the knuckle on an opposition good player. Simple as that.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's not a lot of knuckle, but I get your point.
There's a lot of bumping.
A lot of bumping.
And that's where you hope the umpires go, this is all part of the game, but if it's repetitive, do the umpires step in?
Well, if they step in early. Terry, stay on the line. Callaway Chrome Golf Balls, soft chrome golf balls, which are the number one in the industry, as far as I'm concerned. They're coming your way, a dozen of those, for getting involved in the conversation.
My advice, run, GG, run.
Well, that's what he's good at. That's what he's good at. And you've got to be able to get away from that mentally and deal with just the moment in front of you rather than worrying about what they're trying to do to you. Play the moment in front of you every time. Having said that, if umpires see something illegal early, pay it.
Set to time for the rest of the day.
It won't be paid for the rest of the day. It won't happen for the rest of the day. So that's the challenge for everyone. Terry, thank you for your call. From the moment Cooper Cronk made the big break with the 70th minute, you knew that they were coming, Queensland. You knew that they were coming, and they cracked them in the 77th minute with Dane Gagai crossed, and they won. My goodness, what a game. Queensland 18-16 over New South Wales in Origin 2 last night. And Flem, you missed it. You sacked it in the last however many minutes.
Yeah, 16-6, I thought all over. And I didn't want to hear all the Blues commentators, parochial, bad luck Maroons. The dynasty has changed. It's all blue. The dynasty hasn't changed.
It's fantastic. It's such a good contest. And it was, I thought at halftime, 16-6, I thought, this would be 32-12. It would be one of these games. They would just run over them because their forward pack was just dominating New South Wales and Queensland didn't have an answer. But the second half was a total turnaround.
So
they dominated the second half.
Was it the Cooper, Cronk, and what about Thurston?
Thurston and Slater
inclusion.
Yeah. We spoke to Wally Lewis, Lewis yesterday about the inclusion of those two players. And we know they're legends, but it's not until you see the difference that they make to that lineup. And there were seven changes to the Queensland lineup from game one. But the importance of those two, particularly on that stage, to be able to understand what was going on and deal with the pressure and execute their skills and bring their other teammates into the game and make them better. It's phenomenal. I mean, I don't think we appreciate how good those blokes are.
Yeah, yeah. And how big it is. But also the Maroon spirit, isn't it? They've been such a dominant team, great culture for so long. Make the changes, and they got a lot of flack for that because the Maroons traditionally don't make a lot of changes.
Yeah.
And they've made them. I mean, Thurston and Slater, if they were fit, they had to play. Well, it's still debatable whether Slater should have played the first one.
Well, but, King Wally said yesterday he should have.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy. He missed.
But now it's 1-1. And they're at home.
And Donkey Kong, yeah, back at Suncorp.
I agree with you, Harfitt. When it was 16-6, because it was three consecutive tries to New South Wales, because Queensland scored first, you thought, they're just too good for Queensland.
Yeah,
this era is over. You know, they're too old. They can't keep up. Wasn't fun watching it because the commentators are all New South Wales.
You're right.
You go, that's what I said. That's what I'm going.
This isn't fun. This isn't fun. So it was sort of on, and I sort of was watching it, but sort of doing a few other things. But then I think it was a classic case of New South Wales just getting ahead of themselves. They weren't working nearly as hard, and Queensland gave themselves a chance. But just to put it into perspective about Jonathan Thurston and this whole thing about clutch moments and who is one of the best, he has to be up there because of what he did. He's done so many times in Golden Point, what he did in a grand final. But this is his last Origin. So that kick to win it at the end, okay, it's a place kick and all that, but the pressure that if he doesn't kick that, it goes to extra time again.
Yep.
But he keeps the series alive. He gets to have this finale now at home with a chance to win in a decider. It's just set up for this amazing fairy tale finish. That
but you
he
know
created.
What? He's done it so many times before. He's got a lot of confidence from those prior successes. He would have just gone through his pre-kicking routine. And this is what I do.
Yeah, and his body's banged up half. It's
his right shoulder.
He shouldn't be playing at all, and it is amazing.
He was winged for the second half, effectively, with that right shoulder issue, which might be an issue for game three as well that they're talking about after the game from the Queensland perspective. But talk about his place kicks. They're from all three of them are basically from the sideline. So they weren't in front. They weren't near the post. They were basically from the sideline, and two of them on the right-hand side with the ball curving right
correct.
To left, which was the more difficult side.
The buddy arc.
The buddy arc. It was just phenomenal to see him produce again on that pressure away in front of 83,000 screaming New South Wales fans. Like, it was a fantastic crowd and atmosphere. And to be able to deal with that moment again and stand up for his state was just phenomenal. It's a great contest.
What about the build-up for the third one now?
It's going to be huge
it's
now.
It's just different storylines, isn't it? That the Blues don't truly believe.
Well, who's got the sphincter tightening
Maroons,
more, New South Wales or Queensland?
We're back. You know, we just beat them. We're mentally tougher.
That's right.
It is an amazing thing because it's not for 3 weeks, and they're already talking about the decider last night. There's 3 weeks of home and away football in the NRL that now no one cares about. It's all about, can our players get through these club matches to be all available for the game that matters most? It is interesting.
I do want to play Laurie Daly, the coach of New South Wales, who had a fair bit to say after the game. They didn't play the full 80 minutes. The second half was a very different half to the first half. Let's listen to the coach of the Blues.
It's always difficult because you're never too far in front. So while at stages you might look as though you're on top, Origin can swing pretty quickly. And I think we spoke about that in game one. You know, there's moments there that you win, there's moments you lose. And sometimes when you lose those moments, there's a massive change. But I thought we played some really good footy. But again, you know, we just didn't get it done.
And then that was from the coach. That was the balanced perspective of didn't get it done. I imagine there would have been some more hostile feedback in the room. Then former New South Wales champion Andrew Johns, part of the coverage, slammed them. Have a listen to this.
So I think it's the dumbest half of football New South Wales have played.
Yeah.
They had all the running. Their game plan was perfect. Jonathan Thurston, his performance tonight, so courageous. I guarantee you he'll be heading for an operation the next couple of days. His shoulder is stuffed.
Yeah.
There's your game plan. You just go at him all night. You go at him, and then it puts pressure on the defenders either side. They didn't go to him once in the second half. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah. I thought Joey was going to bash
I could
him.
Not believe it. You got a player out there who cannot pick his arm up off the ground, and they didn't target him, his side of the field, or go at the defenders either side.
I'm sensing that Joey was sort of leaning towards a Blue victory there.
I thought he took the result well.
Yeah. Other than that,
balanced,
it was a great
very
night.
Balanced.
He's a legend, but they definitely got into Thurston in the first half.
They smacked him in the first half, and then let him off the hook. Yeah, Joey's right. They let him off the hook. Didn't go anywhere near
change
him.
Change of game plan. Why?
And if Cam
Smith's the questions.
Kicking for goal in the last couple of minutes, considering his form in game one, he might have got a touch nervous, but JT just steps up,
yep.
And puts it over the black dot. He's a machine. It was great watching last night. If you didn't see it, find a go to YouTube. Find a replay somewhere.
Yeah.
That's right, Flower. Well, we just come off the Champions Trophy for the men in the world of cricket, but don't stop. There's plenty more coming your way. The Women's Cricket World Cup is just around the corner, and the Aussies have got a massive record. Six-time winners of the World Cup for the women's and defending champions as well. And the young lady leading the charge for the Aussies this time around is the captain, Meg Lanning, who joins us on The Breakfast Club on RSN 927. Morning, Meg.
Hello, guys. How are you going?
We are very well, thank you. Now, as I said, a rich history for the Australians in this competition. Are we ready?
Yeah, we're all looking forward to the challenge. We feel like we've had a very good preparation both in Australia and since we've been over here in the UK. So, we feel like we've played enough cracky games and we're ready for the real stuff to start now.
When the Champions Trophy was on for the boys, the build-up was pretty significant. Of course, the top eight teams competed for that, as will the top eight women's teams compete for the Women's World Cup. And it's a trophy on offer, and there's not every tournament or every series you get that there's a significant trophy on offer. What does this mean for the girls currently in their preparations for this carnival?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that it's a massive tournament for us and probably the pinnacle of our sport. So it's been on the radar for a while now, I guess, and the build-up's been really big. And especially since we've been over here, we've sort of noticed how big it's going to be. So we're looking forward to it. World Cups are very special to be a part of, and I feel like the group's really ready to go out there and play well.
When we last spoke to you, Meg, you could tell how mentally tired you were because you'd played so much cricket and you've been able to have a break. What did the break entail?
It was different for everyone, but the good thing was we were able to get away from cricket, I guess, and I think you're right that the mental break was very important for us, and I know a lot of the girls sort of went away on holidays and enjoyed their time with their friends and family, and we came back really refreshed. So, we feel like we're in a really good place as a squad, mentally and physically, and as ready as we can be.
Was it 4-6 weeks of not picking up a cricket bat at all? Was it less than that? What did you do to be able to then get back into it and feel that you could pick it up quite quickly again?
Yeah, look, we had a month off. I put my cricket gear in the shed, so I couldn't see it. And then we came back and had a pretty big fitness block straight up. And then for the last 4 weeks, I guess, we've really started to pick up the skills part of it. So, as I mentioned, we feel like we're physically and mentally prepared, and we feel like we've been able to get enough match practice in as well, which has been great. So, I guess you can think you're prepared, but, there's nothing like the battle, I guess, when you go into a World Cup. So hopefully that means we can perform well.
You're an amazing competitor, Meg, and you have been since you've stepped onto the scene, probably even before that, through your career building up to that. When you're not competing, do you find that you're always a bit on edge, or are you able to shut down?
Oh, look, you always feel like you should be doing something. And I know a lot of the girls find it difficult to even just take a week off you're doing anything real strenuous. So, it was important that we did that, I guess, just to make sure we did refresh, because the last summer was, long and challenging. And I think it's really important that we're able to switch off and recharge the batteries, I guess. So, as I mentioned, I think, we feel like we've had a good break and we're ready to take on the rest of the world now.
Meg, are there any changes or additions to the squad for this World Cup that we should know about?
We've spent a lot of time up in Brisbane and the Sunshine Coast preparing, and, we feel like that's given us enough to get there. So, the squad's got good variety in it, and we're looking forward to putting that on show once the games come around.
Who are the ones that we should be looking out for, apart from the obvious, apart from yourself and Elise? Is there anyone that's sort of putting up their hand to say that they're ready to take the next level, to perhaps even just take the pressure off you a little bit, particularly in the batting department?
Yeah, look, I think someone who's going to a big impact for this tournament is Elise Lewis. She's been around for a number of years now, and the confidence. We saw her make some nice practice match the other day, and she's just got such a great all-round game to take on pace and spin. So she sort of found her spot, I guess, in the middle order over the past year or so. And she's hitting the ball as well as us. So I think she's going to be able to impact for us a lot.
It's always good fun with Jack Riewoldt in the studio for the Tigers, of course, sitting sixth on the table, 7-5 after the 12 rounds. We've got everyone playing 12 games. We're back on track from a ladder perspective. And sixth is okay, although I imagine he would have been hoping for a little bit more. Jack, good morning to you.
Thank you. How are we all?
Oh, it's a bit flat.
Yeah, I know. It's a disco set up there.
I thought you'd be 20% happier today.
No, Maisie just tweeted that I'm on. I'll sort of flick down my phone to have a look, but you caught me unawares there.
Oh, sorry about that. Gave you a good intro, pump up, all that sort of stuff, and I get, oh, you're good, thanks, how you doing?
Nah, great.
There you go.
7 o'clock in the morning.
How
I love
good is it?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row.
How good's life?
Yeah, no, it's going good.
I saw your coach on the couch on Monday night. Thought he handled himself magnificently. Do you, when you watch those sort of programs or you see those interviews, do you give a bit of a criteria for the coaches and tick him off as he goes along? Do you judge him?
I get a bit of enjoyment. Every time he's on radio, I always text him saying, make sure you give me a shout out. one of the great, I got a lot of enjoyment out of listening to him on another radio station. And someone else said, one of the people that was interviewing him, post the interview, they were talking about how honest he'd been. It was pretty similar sort of interview to the on the couch one. I said, oh, it's amazing and really refreshing for a 50-year-old man to admit fault. And I sort of flicked through Dimmer's Wikipedia page and saw that he was 43. I got great pleasure out of texting that to him saying, you've just got to wrap as a 50-year-old man, mate. So congratulations. There's 7 years of your life. So I think that's what AFL coaching does to people sometimes. It sort of ages them a little bit of a quicker rate.
He's hung in all right, Dimmer, hasn't he?
Doing very well.
As yeah. We see that the graying of the hair, which is quite trendy these days, just a general aging, isn't there? But Dimmer's held in, isn't he?
No, he has. He has. And look, I think it's really refreshing for anyone to sort of look at someone in a sort of senior position to, I'll not admit fault, but really learn from experience and be open and honest with that. And certainly Damien and Trent's come out and written a couple of great articles about that too. And it's sort of really been the catalyst for the group to go forward is admitting that we could have done things a little bit better in all aspects of last year and learning from them.
So there's a real evident change in his demeanour, the coach's demeanour, from last year to this year that you've noticed?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's been really refreshing and as sort of like an arm of the coaching panel in terms of the leadership group, we've had to sit back and look at our performances last year and think of areas where we can get better. But it's just parcel of the game. You need to learn from your mistakes and work on your strengths as well. So as a group, I feel like we're doing that reasonably well at the moment.
So how much of it has been him, this Damien, understanding that he needed to be different? And how much of it is actually the new assistant coaches coming in and giving him new ideas and refreshing the place that way? Because that was the sort of the theme going into the season, that it was going to feel different.
Yeah, look, I think, and Dim has spoken about this, is that when he's so driven that that when things started to not go the way we wanted them to go, he actually just went into this, like, nearly Superman mode that was trying to work harder. And sometimes just by pure the fact that you're just trying to work your butt off and find that cure, you actually just keep missing it. So you need to take a step back and get some fresh eyes on it, which we have with our new assistant coaches, and some fresh ideas. And the picture starts to become a little bit clearer once you can do that.
Because it can be hard, I reckon, when you're the main man. And you're trying to set the agenda everywhere. I mean, you need a mentor as well. You need someone who's distant from that to actually identify that, hey, you're not behaving the way you normally play, or you're trying to do too much. So to admit, you know, everyone makes mistakes, but it's actually the opportunity to grow, and that's what you're saying has happened so far. Hey, mate, what about the close games? How do you look at it? Do you look at it, they're disappointing, the ones that you should have won? Or as it said, that generally you've been in every game this year?
Yeah, well, Flynn, that's certainly one thing that we... it's really hard. We would love to win every close game. We'd love to win every game. And as you said, we've been in every game, sort of bar the Adelaide game, where we started really well in the first quarter and then... they really got a hold of us and did a number on us over there and at the Adelaide Oval. But I think what it shows is that if you if you want to take the points against us, you have to be in the fight for a long time. And unfortunately, there's probably sort of maybe four or five games that have been really close results that could have gone our way. But on the flip side of that, we were 20 points behind behind Melbourne at three-quarter time. We come back and win. We were 3 points in front of Essendon at three-quarter time, and we go on and win. Collingwood was a really similar result as well. So we've proven that we can win those close games, but at the moment we're involved in a lot of them because we're not rolling over. We're playing a pretty good band of footy that sees us as the second best side in terms of scores against. So our defence is working really well at the moment. It's something that we're extremely proud of. But we know that we certainly need to probably improve our scoring, and that's something that we continue to address and hopefully continue to get better at.
Is it testing your patience that you're not getting over the line in the close games, or is it, as you said, because overall the quality of the football is so much better than it was last year that you think it just will naturally turn?
Oh, it's not testing my patience at all. I would love to be winning all the games, but you've got to be realistic as well that you actually can't win all the games. I think there might only be one perfect season in AFL footy, and it's just a part and parcel of the game. And the most important thing is that we continue to learn from all of our performances, whether they be wins or losses, and not ride that emotional roller coaster that you can sometimes especially in Melbourne, through that media bubble where one week a reporter will be saying that you guys are the most exciting side in the competition, and the next week they're like, you can't win the close ones, you're mentally weak. So some of the commentary around certainly our football club is a bit wish-washy sort of with every week and every result that goes by.
From the St. Sebastian Ross, or Seb as he's called these days. He joins us in the build-up to the clash against the Gold Coast on the weekend. Game number 300 for Gary Ablett. I'm not sure how he sees that. We'll ask him. Good morning, Seb.
Good morning, guys.
Great to have you on board, averaging 31 disposals this year. It's been a significant year for you. It's been a better year for the Saints. But on the grand scheme of things, how have you rated the Saints season in terms of what you expected at the start of it?
Yeah, look, we played some really, really good footy early, and then sort of after that 7 or 8 game period, we dropped off a bit. I think a few teams started to work out what we're really good at, and were able to take it away from us through, Sydney, Adelaide, West Coast. The Doggies those guys were really able to take away what was working for us, but it was good on the weekend to get a bit of our game style back and come away with the win against North.
So what's the philosophy then? That's an interesting point, I reckon, in footy, that teams start to work out how you play and they try and nullify that, which is fair enough when you think about it. Do you continue to do that and just be the best at that style so that no one can stop you, or do you alter it so that you've got a few other tricks up your sleeve?
There's a little bit of both. I don't think you can go away from it too much. You really want to play to your strengths, but you'll see with most teams, you know, Adelaide were looking unstoppable after 5 rounds and then come out and lost 2 in a row. So it's one of those years where teams will ebb and flow with their form, but I don't think you can go away from your strengths too much.
So, Seb, fantastic season this season. You played 22 games last year, plenty of possessions, but I think you'll go past that 10 Brownlow votes. What do you put down to improvement? Did you have a chat to a couple of your coaches on where you could go the next level, and you're focused on that over the summer?
Yeah, I think to be honest, it's purely just another year under my belt, another year of experience. Like last year was the first year that I've played the full season, so obviously took my learnings from last year and was able to sort of pick apart what I need to work on, and just another year with working with guys like Jack Stephen and Blake Akers, and having Kobe and Steely come in and being able to work with them for a whole pre-season, just learning more about my own game and learning about their game as well. And it's definitely made it easier out in the field.
Seb, we were actually talking about you and Jack Billings a couple of weeks ago about how it does take a while. It's not like you're a 1 or 2 year player. You've been around a little while, and it's been a slow burn to get to where you are at the moment. And it's a little bit like that with Jack. It just takes time to be a consistent midfielder. Is that a fair point?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a fair point. I didn't start playing consistent footy till my 5th year. And I think these days with the high performance sort of things coming in, when guys come in their first season, they might only do 60 or 65% of a pre-season, and that's definitely not enough to hold them in good stead throughout the whole season. So that's why you see first and second years they're generally inconsistent, and then it's not until their fourth or fifth years after they've actually done the full amount of the previous pre-seasons until they really get that fitness base and can sort of enjoy the fruits on game day.
So on Jack Billings, how impressed are you at what he's been able to do this year? And I would imagine you'd be pretty delighted for him considering that the pressure he had going into this season, he seems to have finally cracked the code.
Yeah, no, he's been going really well, Jack. It's probably been frustrating for him along the way because this is probably his first pre-season that he's actually been able to get the most work in because he's had trouble with his shins in the past, and he's someone who can be a little impatient, so that was always going to be a test for him. But no, I reckon that's held him in really good stead. He's a really professional kid, and we know the talent he's got, so he's starting to match that hard work with the talent, so that's why you're seeing him perform on the weekend.
Now, Seb, the turnaround last week, is it all about Jack Stevenson's hair? Did you guys have an intervention on it?
No, we didn't have anything to do with it. He rocked in last Thursday with a beanie on, so he tried to hide it from all us. I think it might have been a bit closer to home why he got rid of it.
Oh, okay.
External pressure.
This is how it
works.
This
is something for the score for you, Scotty.
I'm writing now as you speak.
Scotty Gully's got a national platform these days. He's a journalistic guru, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Morning, Scotty.
Morning, Daniel.
AFLX. Oh, what the hell's going
on? It's an Adam White special, this, isn't it?
What is it?
He's been talking about it for years.
He's got a T-shirt on with it already. He embraces change.
Yes.
Better than anyone I know. It is. I can tell
you. That's a lie, by the way.
I know it is. There's 7 aside, 3 on the bench, played on a soccer field, 10-minute quarters.
Mm.
That's the basic. What they're planning to do is that wonderful week where everyone said Footscray won the flag because it was a week off.
Yes.
The teams that don't play finals will be given an incentive, Flem, yeah, i.e. cash, to play these exhibition games and get momentum.
After Mad Monday.
Yes.
Yep.
So it's not a bad idea. I mean, there is no football on that weekend. They have the EJ Witten thing, I think.
Yep.
So if you're going to have a crack at it, this is the time. So there'll be a few guys on the list from number 35 to 40 running around in nice fancy X jumpers.
We're going to try and track down Simon Lethland too today if we can to talk more about it because I'd like to know the end game. What the end goal is.
Oh, Olympics, like 3-on-3, clearly. It's Olympics.
I don't know about the sport. I like the shortening of game time, like T20 cricket. I don't like the shortening of players on the field. I don't know how that develops your game.
Well, Whitey, this is very similar to your illustrious career in indoor football. It sounds to me this is very indoor football-ish.
Decorated career.
Sorry, decorated.
Yeah, well, we used to play that out at Altona on 5 tennis courts, indoor centre. And it was, I think it was 8-on-8. And it's sort of very little contact, though. And it was played on synthetic grass.
Good like skills.
It was all about skills. And
I like good skills.
Yeah, it was a great game. But what worries me about this AFLX, I don't think the concept is too bad. It's worth having a look at. But when does it get to a point where there's too much football? If you've got the women's competition through, say, February as it is and into March, and then all of a sudden AFLX, which might become a summer-type sport, does there get to a point where there's too much?
Well,
if you're going to try and saturate it for 12 months of the year, the AFL brand, does it get to a point where you actually need some oxygen and not have it for a while?
No, well, they don't think that.
What's the incentive, Scotty? Is it a heap of cash?
I think they're going to have to pay their way to get clubs interested to start with.
Because when you're finished, you want to go.
Well, of course you do.
And if you need surgery, let's get it done.
But, you know, you only need 10 players, so you'd be lucky to get one star and a few of the Resi's boys in there just to run around. I mean,
which goes again. Well, how's the interest level then?
Well, the interest is on because it's so weird and new, and it'll be intriguing.
Okay.
And then hopefully, I think you're right. It'll be a summer sport, even though they've got the women's will be going there as well. So, I don't know. It's just the AFL thinking they need to add another layer to our. You know, there must be the desire out there.
It depends on, to your question, Wade, it depends on the coverage and the accessibility from a media and general public perspective, because the AFL 9's competition is quite a big competition nationwide in the summer, in the off-season, but you don't read about it in the paper, you don't see it on the telly, people are playing it. It's a participation thing. I don't know whether or not AFLX is supposed to be just a participation exercise, or it's supposed to be a opportunity to broadcast and get more revenue.
That, I reckon it's more a Fox Footy summer type thing, or a Fox Sports type thing that...
The NRL do the, what's this?
The Nines.
And that's a big
Auckland
deal
Nines.
And a lot of cash.
But that's only a weekend. That's like one weekend pre-season.
But it could be a situation where players that have retired become part of this.
Oh, I'm back in the game here.
That would that provide a bit more interest.
Yeah,
names.
So like, I'm thinking...
Halford All-Stars.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Imagine Boomer with all that space.
Yeah.
He's running everywhere.
Yeah. I'm not playing on him.
You could start actually forming teams, go the complete opposite to Big Bash and actually have like a State of Origin, but not a State of Origin, but it's, Victoria, South Australia, WA,
State of Origin,
Tasmania. You have an 8-team competition involving the states, and it's played in summer. Using some of the older players.
Well, you wouldn't be able to use the current players through that period, you wouldn't think.
No.
Okay, right. Well, we'll try and track down the footy operations manager for the
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm saying I'm thinking that...
you're a visionary. That's what we love about you. Gary Ablett isn't a visionary, but he's a fantastic player. He plays game number 300 this week. Scotty, has we been sort of missing this story?
I think we do. I mean, and Whitey's big on this, that he's off Broadway, and this is a classic case of that. I mean, he's one of, some people say, the best player of all time, possibly. And 300 games... is a phenomenal achievement, and he's just going to slide into Etihad Stadium with, 20,000 people if you're lucky, and get it done. So it's a bit of a shame, and hopefully he'll be back on Broadway next year with the Geelong Football Club.
It's a combination of him wanting to be off Broadway as well. He didn't want the fanfare this week in the build-up to his game. That's one of the reasons I think he's at the Gold Coast, is that he is off Broadway. It's just a question of whether that will be the case next year, which I'm sure it won't be.
So it goes to the question that's been asked then. If he's happy to be off Broadway for the Gold Coast and then no fanfare for a milestone like 300, considering his status in the game, as you say, Scotty, he's going to certainly be back on the main stage of the number one theatre at Broadway next year if he goes to Geelong. So it's an amazing transformation in terms of what he wants to get out of the game, or how he wants to be received in the game.
Well, I think though it's sharing that limelight though. When you've got Dangerfield and Selwood down there, that's not all about Gary. He can just slot in and be part of it as opposed to being the main man.
Imagine he's 350th at Simmons Stadium. Scotty?
That would be a little bit larger.
I suggest that
will happen.
Book that in for 2019, mate.
Correct.
Well, you know Gary, Scotty. I'm certainly much better than anyone in here.
Very well. No, what? I wouldn't say that. But, he's always been... A guy like Gary is always says hello to you. Very, very polite, remembers your name. Now, Gary Ablett doesn't have to remember my name. Like, I had a bit to do with him at Geelong. But things like that, Flem, you just deal with people like this. That's a big tick for me.
Yep.
Superstars like that come over, have 10 seconds of your time. But that's always what Gary's been like. And I think what he's been through, I think people, if you peel back, and not everyone understands what the family background is, and it's been tough, for him to succeed against all the odds, it is an unbelievable story. Like you hear over in the NBA, and they all grew up in the hood, and all they celebrated the way those guys have made it big. Gary Ablett's story, he's had the hardest road of anyone. I would argue.
Intriguing upbringing.
And we'll never know, because he'll never talk about it. And, Gary Ablett Sr., you'll never get the real story out of all that, but it's a phenomenal effort.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.